Hi everyone. Today we've got a special bonus episode for you specifically from MegaCon Orlando, where Sean McGarry and Carter Lyon, also known as the showrunner for the series and the voice of Rowan, had a panel talking about how we made the series. So, to share it all with you for those of you who weren't at the con, we have got the audio from that panel as our bonus episode. Please enjoy, and thank you all again for your support over the past year, as the one-year anniversary for the series is tomorrow, August 6th. Thank you all for supporting us and listening to us as we've been getting off the ground. I look forward to seeing what you guys think of our future episodes.
All right, Orlando, all you fiction podcast fans. This is our final panel of the convention here at the Creator Stage. We want to thank all of you for coming by the Creator Stage. It is the heart and soul of the content creator community. We've had some amazing panels, some amazing sketch demos, some amazing interviews here at the Creator Stage. So we thank you all for joining us right over here next to the Batmobile, where you can still get a photo with the Batmobile for the next hour or so. So don't miss that. Right here on the stage right now, we got a panel, two creators from the fiction podcast Aslintha. I knew I was going to mess that one up. They're going to kind of explain to you how to create your very own fiction podcast from concept to released episode, including possible ways to get funding, correct ways for marketing, casting, and finding sound effects for your fiction podcast. So if you are a podcast creator, come here right now. Get your questions asked from these fine gentlemen right here. So without further ado, Orlando, huge round of applause. For so you want to start a fiction podcast.
Okay. You take it off, Sean.
Hello there. My name is Sean McGarry. I am the showrunner for Aslintha.
Hi, my name is Carter Folks. I am one of the voice actors in it, and also I deal with a lot of merchandise and marketing.
So basically, we're going to talk about how we made our series from when we first came up with the idea all the way through when we actually got our first episode out for the audiences.
So for a lot of people, this idea and the hardest part when it comes to a lot of podcasts or any creative media is the idea, actually making something. We all start off with, you know, everyone has a notebook they came up with as a kid with stories of different worlds or whatever stories you want to tell, but the hard part is getting that idea to be an actual concept. When it comes to ideas, anyone has an idea. I imagine 100 of us have thought of different fantasy stories we can go to, or fan fiction, or a ton of other media that we do. But to make an actual concept is a whole different ballgame, figuring out what characters go where and how to expand that just simple idea into something that can be fully utilized.
Yeah, you gotta have the full story fleshed out. Like when you're starting, you have to figure out where's the story gonna end? How are they gonna get there? Get all the basic details that pretty much I'm sure a lot of you have heard 1,000 times you need to have beginning, middle, and end. You also have to have all the details in between.
And part of that comes into when coming up with a concept, there is such thing as overwriting. You don't always need to know exactly where your story ends, and it doesn't always have to end the same way you first thought of it, but you should always have an idea of where it's going. If you come up with a fantasy world that's just dragons and sorcerers, what else is there? How are you going to explain it to someone who is listening to you and wants to be a part of it or enjoy what you're making if you yourself don't entirely know where what you're making is going or what it actually is?
Yeah, like the ending for our story has changed where it's always the same location. It's the same overall, it's the same ending. It's just the details of it has changed over time several times.
To start off, our original story when we first came up with it was based off of Dungeons and Dragons, how a lot of stories start, and having a pre-written thing, and that ending has changed 4 or 5 good times now into becoming a completely different from how it originally started. And characters are still there and concepts, and it's good to be able to evolve with your idea, but you still need to know where you're going in order to really solidify what you want in the end.
And then once you've got the concept, you have to figure out, okay, how are we going to do this? First things first, you got to set a budget of some sort, which we totally did not blow our budget out of the water just in the first episode.
Really bad. We did really bad on that.
Yep. That was just kind of, you know, part of the learning curve, because there's a whole bunch of things you have to factor in with the budget that we didn't think about when we first started, like paying for the website. Okay, we're going to have all these characters, and we have to have all these voices. We can't just have our friends and family voice every single character, because we're going to run out eventually if we keep having more characters show up.
So a big thing with budget is budget can be factored into three major things. So everyone knows budget is money. You know, it's what you're spending on people, what you're spending on merchandise, what you're spending on actually making of what you're doing. But there's also a budget of time. You know, what you do and what you're doing takes time. It takes away from being able to do other things. So you also need to budget how much time are you willing to put in? How much time can you put in? And the last thing is energy.
Yeah, like, I mean, are you going to be able to keep it up for the entire duration of the show? Because if you're going really hot and heavy at the beginning of the series and you just waste all your energy right away and then you're just exhausted and burned out, you're going to kind of leave your listeners on the hook with, if you can't meet your deadlines and get the episodes out or the quality goes down, then you're definitely not going to have a happy audience.
If you want to think in format, podcasting especially is most similar to TV in that sort of way. Like movies, you only need to be able to do 2 hours and it's done most of the time, unless you're looking at franchises. But even then, they're only focusing on those 2 hour slots. Podcasts, you have to do repetitive episodes. You're coming out on a set schedule. You have people who are listening, and at a certain point you have an audience that is going to be following and expecting a certain schedule. So it's really up to, do you have the energy and time to be able to budget that schedule to put into these options?
Yeah, like for our series, we end up, instead of having weekly release, it's every other week, just because that way we have the time to actually get everything done on time. Because like, I work in the film industry, and there's some weeks where I'm pulling in 5-15 plus hour days in a single week. So the weekends are pretty much my only time that I could work on it in those weeks. So it's the only way that we really have time on my end for directing is if we have an extra week in between every episode.
And another part is, how exactly are you running what you're doing? So for in our group, there are 4 of us who actually run and plan the whole series. And for a lot of people, that is possible to do it with your friends, but for a lot of people, that isn't. And a lot of times, you are going at this solo. Because going at this solo can be so difficult, you also need to think about what exactly can you have yourself doing, and what can you do, and what can't you, including writing it is a big part of it, especially for shows that are so heavily scripted and story-driven like ours.
Yeah, we have 2 writers for our series. I handle a lot of the action-heavy scenes, whereas my co-writer, Karma, handles a whole bunch of the really dialogue-heavy scenes, and between the two of us, we have, you know, 1 fully functioning writer.
Almost. and a lot of writing goes into, especially collaborative writing with multiple people, how exactly that's going to work. So for collaborative writing, which is something we do a lot of, when you have 2 people who write very differently, there's obviously going to be areas where it can be difficult, you know? You don't want to step on anyone's toes, especially when you're writing, but...
Yeah, we end up normally having it so we decide in advance, okay, are we both working this episode? Is one person handling it? Is the other person handling it? All right, now that we're in the episode, let's split up the scenes. I'll handle one scene, they'll handle a different scene, and then we just kind of, we set that up, and then we go and look at each other's work, and the one thing we do to keep each other from, like, just driving each other insane is we don't edit each other's scripts. We'll add comments and notes off to the side, but that way we can work together in a way that isn't upsetting each other when we have to continue to work together for the rest of the series, because we're currently slated for 50 episodes, so it's going to be a long series if the writers aren't happy with each other.
Yeah, and another thing to think about is when actually writing it, and this is something that a lot of people forget, you don't always need to write a script. Script writing is its own very unique form of writing that I personally don't have much experience in, but it doesn't always need to be that, especially when it comes to a lot of shows. narratively, as long as you have these concepts, things, they don't always need to purposely be character A says this to character B, character C does this, and then character B says this. It can be prompts or proposals or other vague outlines that even give characters more room if you want to give your actors more room to improv and let them really make their own character.
Yeah, one of our episodes, I got stuck on trying to write the dialogue for part of it, and I just kept trying and trying and trying and failing, so I wrote, okay, these are the things that have to happen, and then we got the two actors in a call, and we let them improvise, and it ended up actually turning out really well, so.
Yeah, and that's part of it, is personally, I like improvising a lot of the stuff I do. I find it far more fun to, when you are playing a character, when you are playing them, you are playing them because this character is a lot of the times best suited to be played by you. So your personality, the way you speak and the way you pronounce words, dictation, everything really plays so heavily onto how they're going to sound, how they're going to be. And a lot of choices because of that came into the way I play my character, who is a very different accent than me. And a very different voice than how I normally speak, and that was. So, a big one for that is I'm not actually British, but my mum is. So I learned accents as a kid, and a big choice went into when choosing our characters, do we want everyone, you know, to sound American? And if you have British characters, or people with different accents, or all these diverse sounding voices, how does that fit into a world? And if you do let characters improv like that, how exactly can they fit into a story like that?
And then for another big thing is obviously you have to be able to record record your lines. So you need a mic, obviously, which preferably you get a decent quality one because it's a lot easier to edit and make it sound good for the editors if the mic itself is good, and they can't really fix bad audio sometimes.
There's a lot of things you can do with audio editing software. Then there's a ton of them. Reaper, Audacity, Adobe Audition, and there are a ton of great audio softwares that you can use. But there's one thing that no matter what audio software you use, you can't do. If your mic is truly just bad, you can't fix that. There's always an underlying quality thing that just happens with a lot of microphones.
Yeah.
But that's not to say we haven't used our fair share of a wide variety of microphones.
Yeah. I think we've got two members of our cast who are using the same microphone. Otherwise, it's all different. And we've had members of the cast who've had bad microphones, and we've actually been able to find story reasons to have it happen. I was traveling at one point and didn't have access to my usual mic. And so for the duration of that, I was voicing a guard. The guard had a helmet on, which is why his voice sounded kind of muffled.
And other things, like we recently came across one of our bigger challenges, which is we decided to write our own music for it. And so we had vocalists come in and sing, and not everyone was to make it. And sometimes that lends in a lot. Like half of our vocalists recorded just through their cell phone speaker. And because they recorded through their speaker, it actually lended in as they were all singing on a pirate ship. There's loud waves. And so the fact that they're all singing into their phones almost gave it a lot more of a more natural tone. It didn't sound perfect, which lends into, you know, when you have these people singing and the way that they're singing.
Yeah. And then speaking of editing, you're probably going to need to, well, you definitely need to decide on a software that you're going to use for when you actually put the audio together. And some of the software, like Audition, actually has recording features built in, so you don't have to have separate programs to both edit and record. But when you edit it together, you're going to have something where you can take the clips from every person working on your series, mesh together, and then add in your sound effects. And hopefully it's something that's easy to use that you choose, because there's a lot of them out there. There's
a ton of software you can use, and I mentioned a few earlier. Reaper is a really big one that has a free trial. Audacity is great for recording, but it's kind of iffy on editing. Personally, for most of what we do, we use Adobe Audition. If any of you guys are college students or in school, that's your best friend, because a lot of schools pay for the Adobe package and Adobe things like that.
And if they don't, Adobe actually gives a discount to college students, which we took advantage of because he's from Canada, so he got it for free up there. But then at my school, I didn't get it for free, but I got a very heavy discount. So,
and Adobe, the reason we use Adobe is because Adobe has two really great features. It has the main feature of, obviously, you can record sound waves, you can record whatever files you want, but it also allows you to use built-in filters, audio editing, and built-in effects that you can put on mics, as especially in something we are very fantasy-based, so there's a lot of magical spells and a lot of that mystical sort of era you want to have to people's voices that have to have those effects on, and this software luckily has a lot of those bonuses, but there are a ton of really good softwares they can use that don't cost as much as the Adobe package.
And then for cast and crew, you gotta, realistically, you can do a lot of behind the scenes stuff alone, at least when you're first starting out. But if the show grows and you wanna expand, you're gonna need even more of a crew. And then depending on the number of characters, obviously you're gonna have to cast. We got lucky, between a lot of us, we had a lot of content creators that we knew that were willing to work with us. We, a couple of us work in the film industry, so we were able to get people in from that. We actually had ended up for casting. I'd been working on the Walking Dead series at the time that we were casting part of it, and I got a couple of the actors I'd worked with on that to come in and be in the series, and that helped with that end. But there's websites that you can go online for if you don't have people that you know that have the skill sets. Like castingcall.club is one that we use a lot.
A lot.
Or even just Reddit has a lot of places that you can put out casting calls.
And a big thing that lends towards cast and crew is the fact that sometimes you need to diversify your skills. I have no background in film. I have no background in any sort of the arts. I was actually an engineering student when we started this, so my background was mostly technical, and it evolved into learning a lot of skills that you may not initially have, some of those being editing, story writing, because both of our main editor was not trained when they taught themselves how to do it, and being able to diversify and learn a lot of skills that you didn't initially know or didn't initially have an idea of where you could do that. Pulling skills that you may not be able to so easily fill.
Yeah. And having people who are willing to do multiple jobs also helps a lot. One of our artists, we were doing a table read for one of the episodes that had a younger character in it that we had never cast it because it was a long way away, and we were absolutely dreading trying to cast because the character is an 8-year-old girl, and one of our artists was actually in the call for the table read and volunteered to read the lines for Lilith during that read, and she ended up blowing it out of the park, so we ended up having our voice of Lilith completely on accident.
And talking about artists, art is super important. If you see our monitors, the art that we have there was not our original art. We have gone through, I think this is our third iteration of our main logo, purely because when we were first starting out, we didn't know a lot of artists, so we had to change and update and go through and finding artists who are willing to work with you for going back to budget prices that you can afford, or being willing to work with you can just itself be rather difficult, so...
Yeah, our very first logo was actually designed by my co-writer, who is also one of our editors, who also was one of our actors, who also was our only artist when we first started.
I think they made that logo piece in like an hour.
Yeah, and it was an absolutely, they even agree, it was an absolutely like ugly purple in front of, purple background in front of a poorly drawn key with the silhouettes of the characters, which the silhouettes look good. But the rest of it, it was...
We've gone through a lot, and we're glad to have updated things, because even sometimes, and this is another thing to go with, diversifying and learning all these different things, sometimes there are just some things you can't do. I am very poor at being a writer, and there's a reason why I have never written an episode.
Yeah, and like I have worked on editing one episode, but it's just I am so much slower than the rest of our editors, so I've learned I don't touch the editing.
And when it comes to editing, and we'll hop back into this because I forgot to mention it, sound effects. If you were doing magic, and especially anything, because audio is so important, you can't see us. When we are acting, you don't get to see our faces, you don't get to see our movements, we can't be grand, we can't be jumping around in order to make you look at us. We have to say what we are doing without saying it. So sound effects are so important. If your characters are walking through a door, you need to hear that door, or else you just assume they're still in the same spot. If you don't hear foots moving, how could you assume that they've moved locations? If you don't hear swords clashing, how can you assume they're fighting?
Yeah, and sometimes when you're looking up sound effects, if you can either make your own or you can find them online. When you're searching online, don't always look up exactly what the sound is, because sometimes something that's different will sound completely better. We've had one where it was, I forget what, there was one that was like really weird for what we were trying to find.
I think what we were trying to find a stone door shutting, and if I'm not mistaken, what we used was sand dropping on a tin can or something, and it was super like, it was a super weird noise, but it fits so much better because of the way it reverberates, and sometimes sounds that you do not expect to work can work.
We had one time where we had to make the sound of a footstep in sand, and it sounded way too quiet and muffled as opposed to making it loud enough where you could tell, okay, they're stepping on something kind of like dirt. And we found the sound effect that was a wishbone being snapped from a chicken, and played around with it a little bit, and it sounded like sand.
Yeah, and a lot of these effects are free. Our best friend is freesoundeffects.com.
Very easy name to remember.
It's very easy. It's all self-explanatory. And funny enough, before we started this show, pretty much all of our editors already used this website. None of us talked about it, and we all apparently used the same thing.
And then sometimes you can just make your own. There was, not for this specifically, but for a different production I was working on, we had to make the sound of someone having a tombstone broken over their head. So the sound that I used for that was we had gone outside with a hammer and a watermelon, and it worked. And the same concept applies here.
And going back to another point is actual voice acting. A lot of us, starting this out, as I said earlier, we're not voice actors. I could always do accents, because that's just something I knew. And our friends did some minor streaming and other things like that, but none of us really knew how to project or act or do really what we're doing, except for him.
I believe out of the first 4 or 5 episodes, there was 3 people out of the about 30 who actually had any sort of training. And then it's gone on from there. We've been doing more casting, and then that percentage for the number of people who've actually been trained has gone up. We've been lucky enough. We actually got approached by, we can't say the name of the actor yet because of NDAs, but we actually had one of the actors from Class 1A of My Hero Academia that wanted to work with us. That's in a later episode, and that definitely was a very big confidence booster on our end.
Yeah, and that lends into, who are you going to get to voice characters? You can write as many characters you would like, but if you don't have anyone to voice them, you can't really make them come to life. And that lends into, who do you have? So a lot of our characters in the beginning were voiced by our friends who would come over to our houses and record on our equipment, or our families. Almost my whole family has shown up in an episode at least once.
One of my parents has, but the other has not yet, so.
And most of those people will do it for free, and that helps a lot. But then it goes into, when do you start going with people who may know a little better and may know a little more, and leaning into, when are you going to start going with pros, like the actor we mentioned earlier, who we can't say the name of, but do you approach pros and people who are a little more well-known or a little more practiced versus going with your friends or family as well as going against people on the internet and putting out open casting calls.
Yeah. For us, it was a lot of, outside of those first few episodes where we had to get a couple of people because of requirements from my school, we made merchandise and had been putting it out there, and it started selling. So we used the money from that to be able to actually bring in paid voice actors that weren't just close friends and family, which merchandise has definitely saved us a few times when it comes to finances, because the website that we use for putting out the show outside of Anchor, Spotify, and all those costs a couple $100 a year just to maintain. So,
and that goes into another point, which is marketing. You can make whatever you want. Doesn't matter. No one's going to stop you. But how do you let people know what you've made? Because if you aren't telling people, no one else is. If you aren't letting people know who you are, what you do, what you make, and why you make it, and why you love what you make, no one's going to care, and no one's ever going to be able to know what you're doing. And a big leans into that is social media.
Yeah, we've got Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We just recently started TikTok. Haven't really done anything with that yet. And then we start off with posts on there. All the cast and crew were promoting it on theirs. And then we started doing conventions, and we had our merchandise there, which our merchandise we focused on making it look cool for people who don't even know what the series is, because then that brings them in with the, okay, this is cool. What's it from? Which worked a lot better than even I was expecting.
And another big thing with especially something as indie as podcasts, you know, think Welcome to Night Vale or Magnus Archives, and that you can't really do traditional marketing. You can't run a TV ad. You can't run a radio ad, because that's the people and fandoms who listen to these sort of shows. That's not where they are. These people like that are on Instagram, on Facebook, on TikTok,
Reddit,
including myself, where I can't remember the last time I ever did anything from a TV ad or a magazine ad that I actually watched. And it comes a lot into traditional marketing doesn't work for a lot of these indie shows. A lot of it is truly doing fan interactions, such as doing panels like this, or going out and talking to people and meeting people and getting people to listen to what you do.
Yeah, because last month we were at a convention, which we didn't have a panel at, but we were just there, and part of the cast was signing, and our audience, just from the start of that convention to the following week, ended up doubling.
And that really leans into, no one's going to care about what you do unless you care enough to let them know, and let them know why they should care. And playing into audience, then the question becomes, once you start getting an audience, cosplay, fan art, anything like that, that sphere where people are making their own media, and you can see this in a lot of media, such as Five Nights at Freddy's and things like that, where do you let them go? If anyone who was in that sphere remembers when Five Nights at Freddy games were being pulled off the internet for fans creating their own works, and where do you let the media you're creating let taken by someone else, and where do you let what you're making be able to be interactive?
Yeah, and then one of the big things that we do is we've recently started a Discord server that a lot of our fans have been able to actually interact with us, which has definitely helped with just keeping people engaged
and letting people know, because a lot of the times people forget. You know, you ever had that feeling where you go into a room and you're trying to find something but you just can't remember what you're looking for? That's going to happen with medias. Who hasn't fallen off a show because they stopped watching for a week? Who hasn't, you know, stopped listening to an artist because they just missed an album and they just stopped listening? You know, you need to make sure people are remembering that you exist, because it can be rather hard to do such a thing.
And then there's also the, what platform are you going to have it on for listeners to be able to listen to it? We've got a lot of different options with our show. We've got our own website. We've got Anchor, Spotify, Good Pods,
and
Apple Podcasts.
Pretty much any service. And the one thing we're realizing is that, yeah, a lot of people listen on Spotify, but a lot of people don't. And even though it arguably is probably the biggest music and media or like audio platform like that, there's a lot of people who just listen to music on YouTube. They just let playlists go. And so because of that, you are going to get a lot of artists, a lot of people who are just going to find it through YouTube, which is something we actually only very recently started doing, started realizing.
Yeah, when we first launched, it wasn't on YouTube at all. So we just recently started releasing the episodes one at a time on YouTube, trying to catch up with the actual show itself. And then we've had more people following us on our socials and engaging with us because they found us on there as opposed to elsewhere.
And who's your target audience? Who do you want to listen to it? A lot of people's answer is everyone. You know, you want to give yourself out to the world. You want people to be able to listen to you. But it doesn't work that easily, sadly. You know, like, for younger audience, when was the last time you used Facebook? For older audience, have you ever used TikTok? You know, like, a lot of different generations, and depending on your age, you're going to use and interact with media and different series differently. And fandoms, especially to this size, is definitely something that's way more popular in younger generations, you know, with the rise of things like Dream SMP and things like that. The diehard fandoms and things like that really took a more heavy thing in the younger generations.
Yeah, when we first started out, our heaviest promotion was through Facebook. We did paid ads because they would keep giving us discounts on them. And we were expecting, we were aiming to have our average audience be between 20 and 30 years old. And in actuality, when we looked at the analytics last time, about 65%, I believe, 65% of our audience is over the age of 50, which was completely unexpected, honestly.
And that also leans into, sometimes you have to make adjustments, you know? Like, if these are the people who are listening and enjoying, then why not advertise more to them? If people are going to be listening from this sphere and they are liking it, then sometimes you have to readjust and your original plans just won't work. It's a lot of learning as you go and figuring out what works and what won't, because a lot of stuff that you think, you know, this is a great idea, everyone's going to be able to see it, just don't work all the time.
Yeah, our first episode, we ended up only having maybe 50 listeners, and that was with everyone that was working on it, everyone we know listening to it themselves, plus also promoting it out there. Now we're pulling in on Spotify, we're pulling in like 30, 40 listeners listeners every episode, but on our actual website, we're pulling in a couple of thousand. We've had some individual days where we're getting 400, 500, 600 new subscribers in just a single day off of our website.
And that comes into, what are these fans going to do next, you know? If you watch a movie, and talking about fandoms earlier, you know, you want to chat with people about it, and you want to be able to talk and share what you love with others. And so a lot of that goes into building a community. If you want people to not just interact with your show, but interact with more that you could possibly do, rather than just one show, but multiple things, more series, you want people to be able to connect with you. So building communities, building fans and telling them where to go, like we mentioned earlier, Discord servers is a really big one. Facebook groups, social media pages, Reddit pages, giving people places where they can talk to other people who might care as much as them.
Yeah, and then one of the things that we actually had someone ask was, why do we have the website? Because it costs us a couple $100 a year to actually have the website up and running, and we don't get ad revenue from it. Our merchandise store doesn't go through it. Like, it's just, here's the episodes to listen to for free without ads, and then it's got links that take to each of our socials, or here's information panels on like every person who's working on the series. Here's the link to the merchandise store or the Patreon. And it's one of those, it gives a nice central place for everyone to go where it's not just a standard link tree, and we can customize it to look however we want. Plus it gives another place where people can listen, because not everyone has Spotify, but also not everyone wants to listen on YouTube.
And it condenses. It lets people know who you are, what you are, why you do what you do, and it gives people something to look for. You know, if someone looks up your name, like if you've ever Googled yourself, what are you going to find? Most people find their Facebook page, an Instagram page, someone who looks like them. But if you Google Lanterns Aura, which is the name of our group, the first thing that pops up is our website. And if you are trying to figure out what your podcast is and trying to have someone find you, having that website be the first thing people can find for you and learn about you is so important.
Yeah, and then merchandising, we got lucky with ours. We already have like 3D printers just because of our hobbies, so we 3D print a lot of our merchandise, and we've got we've actually got one vendor here who's one of the stores that carries our merchandise. We're at 4 stores right now that carry our merch?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, we've got 3 in the United States and 1 in Canada. We just got lucky that one of them was going to be here. But we've got an online store as well, which honestly, we don't make nearly as much off the online store as we do from our in-person sales, and conventions are one of our best-selling places. So having cool-looking merchandise definitely is good, but you also need to have some place to sell it.
And a point we keep saying and a point we keep bringing up, a lot of it comes into luck. Sometimes things just work. And if you've ever heard, Welcome to Night Vale creators, Magnus Archive creators talk, a big point that they bring up, a big point we're going to bring up is luck. Sometimes people just find what you're working on and they love it as much as you do. Sometimes fans and communities talk because they enjoy what you do. And so sometimes you just can't control things and you just have to go with what happens, and that's going to happen so often that you just don't get to choose.
Yeah, we started off on launch day, we had one store that was carrying merchandise simply because one of the producers, his parents owned the store, and that was all we had on launch day, and we really didn't pull in a lot of revenue that first time, except for the first couple conventions they did post-COVID. And then from there was a different store that was at a convention that saw the merchandise, liked it, and it's like, hey, can we have 5 of everything? And if it goes well, we'll carry more. And then Carter here got one of the stores in Canada up by where he lives to start carrying it there, and that helped a little bit. And then just last month we were at another convention and another store saw the merchandise just because the owner happened to be walking by. It's like, hey, I like that. Where'd you get it? Oh, you guys are the ones who make it? It's from this show? And he just started carrying it because it looked cool more than anything else, which ended up helping out for us because all of the merchandise we have comes with a QR code that links to the show, which then having the merchandise sell even further increases the audience, which creates more of a demand for the merchandise and leads to more places wanting it, basically.
But now, before everything else, there's one key thing you have to do, and this is the hardest thing whenever you make anything. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter if it's art, music, podcasts, anything. The hardest thing is you need to release it. And it sounds silly, but putting out that first episode, putting out that first draft, taking that first shot of art you did can be so hard because you are being vulnerable. You are saying, this is something I made and I want you to be able to appreciate it as much as I can and enjoy it or use it as much as I do. And that's a scary thing. To be able to publish that first episode takes so much work and so much time, and finally seeing it up there to the audience can be scary and discouraging a lot of the time.
Yeah, when we did that first episode, I was freaking out and still like talking to the producers pretty much hourly up until right at release. I mean, I'm pretty sure Carter was about ready to kill me because I called him at like 4 in the morning freaking out. Like, dude, we need to fix this and this and this and this and this and this. It's like, and at that point, we'd already scheduled the episode for the release. It was already past the point of fixing it. So,
and yeah, and that plays a lot into it. It can be really, really hard, you know, like, every artist always sees what they did wrong after they give it to someone, you know, like you draw a painting and you look and you're like, I could have done this better. I could have added more shading. I could have done more coloring. This voice line could have been recorded better. I didn't like the way I said that. I didn't like the way this person said that. you just need to forgive yourself and live with what you have. That there's no do-overs on a first release.
And speaking as the person who has directed every episode that's out so far for our series, it gets slightly less stressful the farther it goes. I still do get stressed out when we have new episodes with the, okay, what if this is the episode where we lose our audience? What if I did a terrible job? What if everyone hates it? But it gets easier.
And
thank you.
There we go. Just in case. And that's something you're going to have to learn to deal with. Deal with uncertainty, because you don't know if people will listen. You don't know when people will start to listen, when people will find you, and if people will keep listening. And you have to be able to deal when things are going to be scary, because things are going to be scary. You know, like, if you start seeing your audience go from 100 people one episode to 20 the next, you know, that can be scary. But it could just be some people haven't had time to listen to it yet. It could be so many other reasons. So you have to be ready to deal with that fear and uncertainty of things take time. And you don't have control over that. And giving control away to just letting things happen.
Yeah, and don't get discouraged if your audience goes down. We had, between one episode and the next, early on, we lost about 3/4 of our audience in a one episode gap.
That hurt.
Yeah, we were freaking out, and now our audience is way more than it had been even before the drop. And honestly, if we had freaked out and just given up after that, then, well, A, we would have been dealing with the whole, well, why did we even bother in the first place? And B, we never would have had the number of people coming to us wanting to talk about the series that we do now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. A lot of people will listen. A lot of people will like what you're doing or share the same emotions or passions for things that you are doing if you talk to them. Going to talk to people who might, even the very slightest, be interested in what you're doing can have huge ramifications. And we've met a ton of our voice actors or people we've gotten to partner with or other just in our own personal ventures, a lot of people we've got to work with just by chatting with someone and being willing to sell ourselves as well as the podcast. Because when you are making something like this, you're not only selling what you're doing, you need to sell yourself, because there's no big name, you know? Julia Roberts isn't in your podcast. You have to be able to make yourself valuable so that they will see what you are making is valuable.
Yeah, like, basically just never give up and just try to work with what you can, and it all works out eventually.
And once it's all together, all ready, and you hit upload, congrats, you've made it. And that's amazing. And now the question still becomes, what's next? You know, release schedules are huge. When we first released, originally we were going to do one episode a week. We're like, we got this. One episode every week, it'll be easy. It was not easy. It was incredibly difficult.
Episode one took like a month and a half to edit by itself.
It was really bad. And because a lot of these things take so much time and so much energy, then it falls into, you know, what are you willing to give out? What are you willing to wait for? And what these next episodes are going to hold to be able to keep up with what you're doing and keep consistent.
Yeah, and just roll with whatever happens, because you never know what's going to happen when you're working on the episodes. Like, I wasn't expecting to get approached by the actor that we got approached by. And we weren't expecting to honestly have any listeners when we first started.
Absolutely none. That you have to expect that things grow and things take time. And we were expecting to have an audience of zero. And it has really been nice to know that other people enjoy stuff just as much as we do.
Yeah. Does anyone have any questions before we wrap up?
Because we do have a few minutes left.
Okay. Thank you. First of all, thank you for your time. How long are your episodes? And how do you monetize other than merchandise?
So, okay, our episodes, Some of them, because we haven't really had a set time per episode, so our shortest episode is 8 minutes. Our longest episode, not including, we did a Q&A episode that was an hour long, so excluding that one, our longest episode was 29 and a half minutes, because with podcasting and releasing yourself, you don't have to follow a set time. It helps. We do try to stay around the 15-minute marker. If you get to a certain size of audience and maintain that size of audience, you can actually get sponsors and do advertisements on Spotify, Anchor. But the whole thing with that is you have to hit, I believe the number was 50.
I believe it was 50 individual listeners on Anchor, which is the platform we release everything on. If you haven't heard of them, they are used by Spotify. That is their release platform.
And then they release it out to all the other platforms we're on except for our website, and they track all of that and put it into our total listener count for everywhere outside the website. Once you hit 50 listeners, you become eligible for monetization through there, but you have to hit the 50, and then once you're at that, you don't get the offer right away. It's a, you have to get approached by a company. We got approached by Anchor themselves with a, hey, would you be willing to make an advertisement for us and have it in your episodes? And then it's not a very large dollar amount. It's about a penny and a half per listen per episode, which does add up over time, but it's not a very large amount. We also have Patreon, where people can pay every month to get access, and we release our episodes early on there for them, which that we get, it's, we get $5 per person per month that pays on there to just listen to the episodes early.
Yeah, monetization outside of things. You have to be very creative with something like a podcast, you know? No one can see what you look like. There is no official art unless you release it. So you have to be very creative with how you do things. And a lot of it, as he said, can come from Patreon fandoms. A lot of it can come from AdSense. And we also do a lot of streaming, because we ourselves are streamers, so we use platforms like Twitch to we get sponsorship through there as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is just being willing to diversify the way you're doing everything.
Yeah, we made a kids game for a charity event that only got used one time, and then we still have the game, so we bring it to other events sometimes, and people play $1 to play the game. Pay $1 to play the game, and we get money from each of those. So that was another source, which it's only about an extra $40, $50 per event, but it adds up from all those sources.
So thank you for your question. I think we should be good.
Any other questions?
Unless there's anyone else, I think we're good. All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to us. We really appreciate it. We hope you all have a good 13 minutes left in the con. Run, grab, buy whatever you can that's left, because this is what everyone waits for. And have fun.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll be at booth 4077 like in a couple minutes until the con closes in about 13 minutes if anyone has any more questions.
Yep. Thank you.
Right.
Huge round of applause. That does it for the creator stage. We wrapped up 4 days, and it feels so good. Don't you agree? Thanks to everybody who participated in the creator stage, all of the comic book creators, the amazing sketch artists, the Batmobile, of course, we got to thank the Batmobile, doing it for charity, the Kubert School. Thank you all to the podcasters, YouTubers, comic creators, and everybody that took part in this amazing, fun show floor experience. Orlando, you are fantastic. We will see you here next year.